Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week, Ohio Governor John Kasich revealed the bones of his new school funding plan, which at its heart goes straight to the inequities among Ohio's more than 600 school districts, working to close the gaps between the low-wealth and the high-wealth districts. At an online town hall meeting last week, he put it this way.
If you have a low valuation and you raise 20 mills in your poor district, you could be only producing $700 to $800 per pupil. If you live in a wealthy district and you levy mills against your valuation, you might be producing $14,000. So to have one district that produces $700 per pupil and another one producing $14,000, that's clearly a chasm that we needed to close. That's precisely what we have done.
Joining us now to get a handle on the governor's plan is Ida Liaskovsky. She's a reporter for State Impact Ohio. It's a reporting collaboration among Ohio public media stations and NPR, focusing on the state of education in Ohio. Welcome, Ida.
Hi, Ann. It's good to be here.
Also with us today is Dr. Robert Stabile. He's a former superintendent and an expert on Ohio school funding. He is the author of the Ohio School Finance Blue Book. Welcome to the show, Dr. Stabile.
Glad to be here.
So Governor Kasich was expected to address the longstanding inequities between school districts in Ohio. Did he achieve that, and did he achieve it over the long run? Leo, what's our sense about that going forward?
Ida, would that be me?
Ida.
I just wanted to make sure. No problem. So the sense is a little bit mixed at the moment. Superintendents are really wondering what exactly this plan is going to mean for their individual school district. It looks like schools will still have to rely on levies to some extent, but it looks like the plan does make an attempt to equalize between poor districts that have a really hard time raising money through levies and richer districts that have it much easier in that sense.
Dr. Stabile, any fundamental changes so far from where you sit, or is it just bringing up the funding from the state to the poorer districts?
Well, it's a new approach. It's pretty basic when you try to fund schools that you determine what it costs to educate a student, provide a basic education. The usual way to do that is to determine what goes into making up a basic education. You add up all the costs and you get a number. Let's say the number is $5,000. What the governor has done is taken 20 mills and levied it against $250,000 per pupil in tax valuation, and that comes up with the same $5,000. But the focus is very different. He's focusing on these inequities, which, you know, this has been a problem in Ohio schools since the 1930s. Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful thing. And I think also by focusing on this, he is taking the heart out of the DeRolf constitutional issue, because that's what they were focusing on as well.
Dr. Stabile, you've said that the struggle for money is built into the system. Is that what you were talking about? And has that essentially changed now, at least for the next couple years?
This system is not going to produce a big change in what happens in local school districts. It's giving districts more money. It's a very rational plan. But in Ohio, the way we restrict property tax increases is by having people vote on the issues. If you want more money for schools in Ohio, you've got to pass a levy. And that's going to be as true next year as it is now.
The governor wants to bring, Dr. Stabile said, all districts to a level of funding equivalent to $250,000 of property value for each student. Only 4% of the districts have property values that high in Ohio, according to the Columbus Dispatch. Is the message here that only districts can fund at that level are achieving the adequacy called for in the state constitution?
No, I think the message is that the governor is trying to get every district in the state of Ohio to be part of this adequacy thing. Right now, about 2/3 of the school districts in the state of Ohio aren't even funded according to the foundation formula. They're on guarantees, and when this is done, when the governor's plan is enacted, I've been told by Tom Ash, the Buckeye Association of School Administrators, legislative liaison, that 237 districts are actually going to get increased funds. The rest of the districts in the state are not going to get increased funds. They're going to be on a guarantee.
Ida, former Governor Ted Strickland in 2009 introduced an evidence-based model that would have apparently revolutionized the way Ohio schools were funded, but that model was never funded. Is it clear that there's enough to fund the Kasich plan?
Well, I think that's what everyone is waiting to find out in today's budget announcement is where does all this money come from? The governor has said that he will not touch the rainy day fund, which is, I think, what a lot of people are expecting. There's about $1 billion in the rainy day fund. And he did say that he's not going to use that to fund education. He's still concerned about sequestration and budget talks in Washington, D.C., so he'd like to put that money aside for that, if that ever happens. He has said that this plan would be funded. Actually said it is fully funded through the general fund and through the lottery, but I think we're all hoping to find out exactly how it's funded and where it's funded from and for how long in today's budget announcement.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the governor's proposed education budget with Dr. Robert Stabile. He's a former superintendent and the author of the Ohio School Finance Blue Book. Also, Ida Liaskovsky, she's a reporter for State Impact Ohio. If you would like to join the conversation, questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Also go to our website. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Immediately, people were saying that the governor is simply redistributing state funding from high-wealth districts to low-wealth districts. Ida, I mean, any sense about that? And has he responded to any questions along those lines?
Well, the governor says he's not just redistributing funds, but increasing funding overall. I mean, his plan would add $1.2 billion to education over the next 2 years, and it includes no new cuts. Whenever there's talk of equalizing school funding in Ohio, I think there are concerns that it's just shifting money away from wealthy districts to poorer districts. It sounds like this plan, more than anything, just gives more aid to poorer districts. One of the promises that the governor made to superintendents at that meeting with the Buckeye Association of School Administrators last week was that no school would get less funding in this budget than they did last year. So I think everyone is hoping that they will at least stay even and that those poorer districts will get more money. Wealthier districts will get less support under the governor's plan. That's certainly true.
No less than last year. Of course, last year represented almost a $2 billion cut in funding for public education in Ohio, right?
Right. Yeah, it was actually the budget 2 years ago included a $1.6 billion reduction in school funding. Part of that came from expirations in federal funds like the stimulus program, and part of that was cuts from the state budget. It was a recession. A lot of governors were cutting school budgets.
Right. Bill and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning. Clarification on the, quote, rich districts, for example, Olentangy Ridge. Does this suggest that the Olentangy Ridge residents would have to pay more taxes because they're diverting dollars away from richer districts to, quote, poor districts?
Ida?
No. My understanding is that for rich districts, things would more or less just not change. You'd still have to pass probably as many levies as you did now. But taxes wouldn't go up because of this plan. It's just that wealthier, quote unquote, wealthier districts, which, you know, when we say that, we usually mean districts that have high property values, would not get that extra state funding that their poorer counterparts would. And so they'd still have to rely on going back to the voters and asking for more levy funds, you know, every couple of years.
That if I understand you, since they'll get less state dollars, and since the district relies on state and local dollars, that would force them to come back to the voters for additional levies. Is that correct?
Well, the governor has said that no district will get less funding than they did last year. So if that's true, then you shouldn't get less state funding. You just won't get that extra bit that other schools might.
But he did say that they expect that he did say, and I had it at the top of the hour, that they expect the wealthier districts are going to be able to do more to help yourself.
Yeah. And that's the idea that you can pass more levies, you can pass them easier. And when you do pass a levy, you get more money out of that. So you should rely less on state funding is the thinking.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
Another thing I'd add to what that person had to say, the state has been trying to equalize funding of schools for a long, long period of time. And every 2 years when they develop a formula, they develop a formula that's designed to help poorer school districts a lot more than it's designed to help anyone else. And what those formulas generally do is, if they were to be applied, they would involve cuts in school funding for wealthier districts. So what the formulas have contained and contain still is a guarantee that districts would not receive less funding in the new plan. You see, school districts have such fixed budgets that they have a very, very difficult time doing without funds. I mean, if funds are cut, they either have to lay off people or cut programs, which is a very, very difficult situation for school districts. And when that happens, what they generally do is go on the ballot. And when they go on the ballot, what they generally do is blame the state legislature for the cuts. That's not a very good situation for the legislator from that district. So the state almost never, I don't recall a period, never takes money away from districts. What they do in general over a period of time is take their additional money and keep giving more and more of it to the poorer districts to try to equalize. So I don't think that gentleman has to worry about his school district having to pass a levy because of the new state foundation program.
And Ida, just to be clear, we're not sure where the funding's coming from, but more than that, it's unclear whether this plan can go forward, beyond the next 2 years, or maybe even beyond the next term if Governor Kasich's reelected. Right? I mean.
Right. I mean, don't forget, this plan was just proposed last week. It still has to go through the House and then has to go through the Senate. The legislature has to talk about it. They're going to amend it. It's going to change. Who knows how much is going to change until they finally adopt it. Same thing goes for the budget, which will include the provisions of how to fund it. That's going to have to go through the legislature. It will probably change quite a bit by the time they actually adopt it over the summer. So it's unclear exactly what this plan will look like in its final stages. It may change along that time. And even so, the plan only lays out what the state is going to do for the next 2 years. So when it talks about, for example, the expansion of the voucher program, that's only mapped out for next year and the year after. And after that, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, Dr. Stabile, though, you mentioned that insecurity of school districts, that they're not able to plan out very much. That's why I question, is there any real true fundamental change here that districts can count on going forward?
Well, districts can count on the fact that it's extremely difficult for the state to cut back on school funding. They may not count on any additional help in the future, but I think it's pretty fair to say that there aren't going to be cuts in programs and in state funding in the future because of state funding. That's not going to happen for the political reasons that I just talked about. Mm-hmm. Every time the state legislature comes up with a plan, they do printouts to determine how that plan will affect every school district in the state of Ohio. And if you're a legislator from school district ABC and a plan is going to cut funding to your school district, you're not going to vote for that plan. Because if you vote for that plan, I'm going back to what I said before, there are cuts in your local school district, they're going to blame the legislator, and that legislator is not going to get elected. So the dynamic is, it's in play now and it's always been in play. They do not make cuts.
Well, thank you, Dr. Robert Stabile, for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Robert Stabile, he's a former superintendent and the author of the Ohio School Finance Blue Book. Ida Liaskovsky will stay with us from State Impact Ohio when we return. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you can support our station for as little as $5 a month. As a basic member, you'll receive some great benefits, including a one-year subscription to our program guide, Airfare Magazine, a complimentary one-year subscription to Newsweek Online, a subscription to our FYIE newsletter, and WOSU Public Media Grocery Tote. A basic membership starts at just $60. Visit WOSU.org and become a member of 89.7 NPR News today. 20 degrees in downtown Columbus. There is snow expected this afternoon, 1 to 3 inches of accumulation, and a high of 29 degrees. Snow's likely tonight as well, with a low of 19, maybe another half inch overnight tonight. Cloudy skies Tuesday and a high of 30. Support comes from Meijer, a family-owned Midwest supercenter. Meijer is dedicated to helping keep families healthy by offering Meijer brand natural and organic items like produce, canned goods, and more. Experience the difference. Information at Meijer.com. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Last week, Ohio Governor John Kasich unveiled his plan to revamp the funding system for public education in Ohio. One focus of his plan would expand funding for charter schools. Still with us to talk about that is Ida Liaskowski. Sorry about that, Ida. Ida is a reporter for State Impact Ohio. It's a reporting collaboration among Ohio public media stations and NPR focusing on the state of education in Ohio. Also with us now is Pete Van Leer. He researches education funding for Policy Matters Ohio, a nonpartisan think tank. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thanks for having me, Ed.
And also with us, Greg Lawson, a policy analyst at the Buckeye Institute. Hi, Greg. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pete, you have questioned whether the governor's plan really puts more money where it's needed, given that it is still sending less money to districts than they received under the budget 4 years ago, as much as $1.8 billion less.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good question you asked in the previous segment about, you know, is this really that different? And that's a starting point. You know, we're really... You know, it's some money going in the right direction, getting back up to what's needed, but really still falls short. And the question of, you know, you touched on the guarantee and how much of this is going to be really one-time money. And then you start to say, well, what happens in 2 years? So I think there's some serious questions about that. How adequately are we funding? And at the same time, as the districts are receiving some of this money, you know, the increasing funding for charters and vouchers is taking that away as well.
Yeah, Greg Lawson, Dr. Stabile pointed out that, well, they're not getting cuts, and that's good. That's something that school districts can count on. But going forward, knowing how large organizations like a school district has to plan ahead, whether it's capital expenses or teacher hiring and that sort of thing, can you really operate on a two-year turnaround forever?
Well, I think the key thing is that the governor's made a choice to not see any cuts. And I think that the first thing is hopefully school districts are, and I've heard some initial thoughts, statements from some of the superintendents, that they are thankful for that. And I think there's a key thing that we need to understand about the context here. And that is we keep talking about 4 years ago, but we also forget conveniently that there was over $1 billion sloshing around the system that came from the federal government
right. Through
the stimulus funding.
Mm-hmm.
That money, that spigot was cut off. Whether you think that was a good thing or a bad thing really doesn't matter. The point is it wasn't there. If the state was going to spend over $1 billion more, I think it was somewhere around $1.4 billion of the money that was not in that last budget that's considered all these draconian cuts from the last budget cycle, a good chunk of that, the lion's share of that, was the federal stimulus dollars. Now, there were a few other things that contributed a bit more to the whole, too, but that was the big piece. Where was that revenue going to come from, and where do people think that's going to be occurring? The state, what were they going to do to supplement that loss of money? And where were the districts in terms of trying to navigate the situation at that time when they knew that there was a good chance that this federal stimulus dollars weren't going to be around for a long time?
So they're used to this.
I think they're both used to it, and I think that prudent planning perhaps 4 years ago, you know, in preparation for the potential that that money would not be there, as it turned out not to be, would have been a good thing back 4 years ago. We might have actually seen far less of these cuts to some of the programs that schools have been complaining about so much the last couple of years.
Pete Van Leer?
Yeah, I'd just like to correct the numbers a little bit. The federal stimulus money that was in the budget 4 years ago was less than $1 billion. It was $875 million. The lion's share of the cuts actually came from the phase-out of the elimination of the reimbursement for the public utility tax and the tangible personal property tax. So that was about $1.1 billion. So, I mean, it was really a state decision to take a lot of money that had been going to the local school districts, and also not to replace stimulus money. The stimulus money was meant to fill a gap, and it did its job quite well. The state decided to go through with income tax cuts that removed money from the general revenue. We're now looking at $2.5 billion a year from the 2005 tax cuts that the state doesn't have to spend on basic services like education. So we need to keep it all in context, especially as the governor is moving forward talking about more income tax cuts. If we keep cutting the revenue the state has, and those cuts benefit primarily more affluent Ohioans, we're not going to be able to fund schools the way we need to.
A big component of the governor's plan is to expand public funding of tuition for private schools. But as the headline in the Dispatch put it today, the only limit is the budget. In other words, you can expand the funding of tuition for private schools, in other words, the vouchers at $4,250 a year per child under a certain economic level. But it's limited to 2,000 kids the first year, 4,000 the second year. That's a lot of limits, Greg Lawson, going forward, right? It doesn't really expand to all children.
Well, I think that's true up to a point, but one of the key things about it is part of school choice. Buckeye Institute has long stated that we needed to have other options for parents to be able to avail themselves of instead of having to have everything run through the typical, quite frankly, bureaucracy and things that we have become so accustomed to in public schools. So any expansion, I think, is actually a good thing, even if there are some inherent limits that are going to be on there because of the funding. So to the extent that this offers, even if it's limited, but it's more than we had previously, I think that is actually a good thing.
Are you concerned that it doesn't, and I know you don't like regulations, you think that have created a lot of the problems in the districts as it is, but are you concerned at all that there's no accompanying qualification for the schools? In other words, shouldn't they be up to a certain standard to be, because there's the implication always that they're a better school than whatever the kid's already going to. That's not always the case.
It may not always be the case, but I would probably say that frequently and most likely that is the case. Most people, and when folks make choices, even without respect to vouchers, to send their kids to a private school, this decision I myself personally am having to consider right now as I'm getting ready to have kids that are getting ready to get into the school system, and I live in Columbus. We look at the curriculum and parents look at that and they'll make a choice as to what they're able to do. And usually they're going to feel comfortable with the curriculum. They're going to feel comfortable with where testing is. And you can ask these kind of questions of the schools. So should the state come in and do that? Well, the key thing is they are private schools. And it is to some extent the parents' responsibility to kind of do some homework as they interact with staff at that school to find things out. Because I think that for the most part, they're going to achieve the goals that you want them to achieve. I don't know that I would envision there being a good scenario where you would have the state come in and try to come up with
a good housekeeping stamp of approval.
I think that could be. First of all, I don't think any of the schools, the private schools themselves, would probably find that to be a bit difficult, because once the state comes in and starts telling you what to do, they start telling you what to do on a lot of other things. And there are certain things that in particular private schools may want to do because of their not only their pedagogy, but their values and things of that nature that you don't necessarily want the state to impinge upon. And so if the state does that, you're going to run into a whole host of problems that I think are problematic.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We have a full house today. Ida Liaskowski, a reporter for State Impact Ohio, is still with us. Greg Lawson from the Buckeye Institute, and also Pete Van Leer from the Policy Matters Ohio, talking about the governor's proposed new education funding plan. There's still a lot of flesh to be seen and probably coming up later today when the budget's revealed. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment. Ida, the amount of the voucher would be roughly $4,250 a year. Do we have any sense about how many private schools can afford to accept that amount in payment? Because one of the stipulations is they cannot charge any more than that either.
I'm not sure. I know with the previous voucher program, schools could charge more, and it would be up to the family to make up that difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure how that would work. Also, with the previous voucher programs, you would get more if it's if you have some sort of special needs or something like that. I mean, there's different kinds of voucher programs, and you could sort of pick and choose between those.
Right.
Some of the special ed voucher programs go up to as much as $20,000. This would be much, much less than that. And to be honest, I'm not sure how many students or schools would be able to fit that.
Pete Van Leer, any thoughts about that?
Well, I think one answer to that is that if you look at Cleveland, you know, they recently bumped up the amount for their Cleveland voucher, which is separate from the rest of the state. And there did seem to be a bump in enrollment. It had been pretty flat, and it did jump up a bit this year. And I think that was a indicator that, you know, the higher voucher amount, $4,250 for K-8 and $5,000 for high school, did, you know, made it more attractive to schools. It was basically an influx of new money, especially for their already enrolled kids, but made it perhaps more feasible to take on some more kids. I think the questions we need to ask about the voucher, though, you know, so much that we do in education, we talk about research, and there really isn't the kind of research that we'd want to have to make this kind of decision about expanding the program. You know, our knee-jerk reaction, as Greg mentioned, is like, oh, yeah, private school's better, but you know, some general research shows that when you control for demographics, that's not necessarily the case, particularly in math, and often not in reading either. So, you know, I think we make some assumptions because we think private schools are better, but that may not be the case. And you have to also look at, you know, you get into a private school, it's not as though you get a voucher as a family for your child, and you're immediately into the private school you want to be. You know, those private schools retain the right to reject students for a whole array of reasons, in a way that public schools, you know, generally are not allowed to do by law. So I think there's a number of issues in this that we need to pay attention to. And finally, you know, regulation. Sure, we'd love to have private schools do their own thing. That's what they're good at. But if they're going to take that much private money or public money, I think it really calls into the question, you know, shouldn't we be providing a little bit more oversight and reporting on how they do, just as we do with public schools?
Greg Lawson, say a child with special needs, maybe struggling with reading, maybe not necessarily dyslexic, but needs extra help with reading. It's documented. A private school could ostensibly say, no, we don't want to take that kid because we don't want to have to spend the extra resources to help them. And it's that very special need that is driving the parents away from the public school because they're not providing what they need.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that's one of the reasons why it's not the be-all, end-all in terms of vouchers being everything. I think the key thing here is that you have a multiplicity of options. Vouchers is one. Quite frankly, charter schools is another one, and there's some pretty good provisions, it appears. Again, the big thing is we haven't seen the flesh on the bones yet, so we all, I think, have to reserve judgment until we see that. But there's some initial ideas about charter schools that might be very positive, too. And charter schools are public schools, so they do have to deal with many of the same outcome-type situations. I know they have certain rules, and there's arguments that they don't have to do everything that traditional public schools do.
But that was kind of the idea in the first place.
Exactly. That was part of the idea, was to free them up so that they could do things differently. And there's I actually serve on two charter school boards personally, so I can tell you that there's some good things about them, and there are some challenges, and not every charter school is a good charter school and all of that, but they serve a function for certain types of populations of students that aren't necessarily being well served in the traditional public school. So anyway, it's really about all the various options. So yes, you could have a problem with a particular voucher issue, but there is other additional choices that are out there, and it appears that at least in this current funding model, there's going to be some additional funding available for some of these special needs type situations as part of second tier, besides the opportunity, core opportunity aid that's part of the basic formula that's going to come out to the schools. There's going to be some additional dollars available to those that have higher populations of special needs children. So there's going to be a number of different ways that we try to address this. So there's no one answer. And I think that's the key here, is continuing to expand the options so that there is a wide swath of things that a parent can do, so that if one opportunity and one pathway may be closed, there's another pathway that's opened up for them to be able to explore, rather than having to go back to the traditional default, which may be a school district that hasn't performed historically. I mean, you know, the Cleveland schools, for example, are a classic example. We've had to now pass specific legislation dealing with one school district because of a history of it not doing well, and yet we're spending $15,000 per student up in Cleveland.
Well, it does. It's unclear whether passing all that legislation and changing who runs the school district has done any good at all.
That's true, and I would also argue that funneling more money ipso facto hasn't necessarily proven that it's the case, too, which gets us to a broader argument about school funding, which is we talk all the time and assume that just because you plug more money in that that's automatically going to do it. There's oftentimes other sociological type issues that are going on in certain communities and challenges and economic issues that are going on that play as big a role, if not more, than just the funding that goes in. Because the state has actually been spending a lot more money on schools over time. If you look at the inflation in the mid-90s, we've been way over inflation in terms of state aid to schools. So I guess that's one of the things that is always interesting to me is there's always this talk that the state's never doing what they're supposed to be doing. They've been spending more and more and more. My question is, where do you stop, one? And two, prove to me where the outcomes are when you have spent all this extra money.
You know, the idea of funding going up overall over time is not my understanding. My understanding is when you adjust for inflation, we're actually it's a lot less money going to schools now than there were 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, there was because of the stimulus thing and some of the money that came out in this last budget, but we have spent state dollars largely because of the DeRoff case that was going on in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot more money that was thrown into the system in the wake of that. I don't think it's as much as some folks would want, but it has exceeded. My understanding is if you look at LSC, Legislative Service Commission numbers, and you plot it against inflation, it appears that it has gone above inflation for a long time. And so there is additional revenue that's been going in. It's just now how that's been parceled out to specific districts and within that construct, that's maybe a bit of a different story. And if you drill down, you may find that some districts have not had as advantageous a situation. But the state's been putting a lot of money, and it has been forever the top issue thing that the state spent money on. And it's only recently that Medicaid has kind of bumped into that. So the state's putting the money in there. And so the question is, how much are we supposed to do? And some folks might want the state to do, you know, a lot more, but that's going to require a much different tax structure and a much different option for things. And that may have other negative implications for businesses and problems. You're talking about a state that lost 600,000 private sector jobs in a decade. Raising taxes in a state that had that, we've seen some improvement in the last few years since 2010. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily meaning that we have money coming on trees that we can just tax and bring in and plug into the system.
Pete Van Leer?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the legislative service commissions over the past decade, actually, as you said, Anne, the funding has dropped. If you look at inflation adjusted, I mean, we're lower funding than we were 10 years ago. I think this is a problem. We don't provide the adequate funding for schools. And on top of that, you have to look at the money that's being taken out for the four different voucher programs now, and there's a fifth proposed here, and charter schools. I mean, my daughter attends a charter school in Cleveland. It's an excellent school. A group of parents and some local educators started it together. That's what charter schools are supposed to be about, not about a for-profit company coming in and deciding where to start schools. But the funding increases for charter schools over the past 10 years have outstripped enrollment increases. It's the money's growing faster than enrollment for charter schools. So you have to take the privatization piece, vouchers and charters into account, because that is drawing money away from the school districts. And in many school districts, they're getting, you know, much less, you know, the wealthier school district in particular, they're getting much less state funding per pupil than is taken out for, say, a charter or a voucher. So there's some complicated moving parts here, but the basic message is that, no, funding actually, when you adjust for inflation, has not been increasing in Ohio.
Well, I'm sure that this is an ongoing conversation that we will continue into the future. I want to say thanks for now to Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute. Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Also, Pete Van Leer, thank you for joining us from Policy Matters Ohio. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation. Still with me will be Ida Liaskowski with State Impact Ohio and more. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Egypt in crisis, a collapse of the state warning, and what comes next? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here for Hour 2 of All Sides and a look at the dynamics of the doctor-patient relationship in cancer cases. That's from 11 till noon here on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 20 degrees. Expect about 1 to 3 inches of snow today, a high of 29. Snow is likely tonight, another half inch of accumulation and a low of 19. Cloudy skies for Tuesday and a high of 30 degrees. There is a chance of snow Tuesday night as well, a low of 21, and some sunshine with a high of 31 degrees on Wednesday. Support comes from ARC Industries, providing business solutions to Columbus's industrial, retail, and commercial markets, and helping people with disabilities find meaningful work. ARC Industry, dedicated to the success of its customers, employees, and community. ARC Industries is online at arcind.com. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. Last week, Ohio Governor John Kasich unveiled his plan for funding education in Ohio. It isn't the first plan that has been put forward since the 1997 Ohio Supreme Court decision in DeRolf. I should say the first one, declaring the system inequitable and inadequate in some quarters and therefore unconstitutional. Three governors have come and gone since the DeRolf lawsuit was filed in 1991, and with them their plans to address the problems. Still with us to talk about the latest proposed school funding plan is Ida Liaskovsky. She is a reporter for State Impact Ohio. It's a reporting collaboration among Ohio public media stations and NPR focusing, on the state of education in Ohio. Welcome back, Ida. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Still good to be here.
Joining us now is Michael Griffith. He's a senior policy analyst for the Education Commission of the States. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Other states that rely so much on property taxes surely are facing or have been facing the same problems of inequity. Is there an apple-to-apple comparison out there for Ohio, or is every state that much different from the next?
Every state is struggling with this, with the idea, how do you find a way to move away from property taxes and relying so much on local property revenue, while at the same time trying to equalize funding between those poor parts of your state and those wealthier parts of your state. No one has found sort of a perfect way to deal with this. In some cases, what they've moved to in certain states is a statewide property tax, and that way you're sharing property tax revenue, but that tends to be pretty unpopular. In other places, they become more reliant on the state sales or income tax and tried to take those funds and tried to equalize education spending between districts. But in both of those cases, it's a struggle in states and it can be pretty unpopular with some people.
Because even if you have a statewide sales tax, you can't stop a district from deciding to raise revenue in and of itself, right?
Well, you have states like Michigan that have moved to a statewide funding system where it's an attempt to equalize funding, and where they use state sales tax, income tax, and a state property tax to share revenue. But what the state does then is take away local control. So the state of Michigan tells every school district exactly what they can spend. And there is no flexibility by school districts to change that. You have other states where they attempt to put controls on the wealthier districts that say you can spend more, but for each dollar you raise, you're going to have to share 50 cents with the state, and then the state will take those dollars and redistribute them to the poor school districts. Texas has that system in Vermont. So anytime you have the state getting more involved, they put greater control over the system, and that tends to be unpopular for places that want to have local control.
Ida Liaskovsky, is there a sense that Governor Kasich is bringing with all of this more control issues, that school districts will be more micromanaged at the state level if they're getting this kind of funding, particularly the low-wealth districts?
Well, Kasich has said that he actually wants to reduce the amount of management coming from the state and from sort of the central administration, if you will. And even really down to the building level, he has said that he wants central school administrators to sort of you know, be less nitpicky about what individual school buildings do with their own funding. Part of his plan would somehow, it's unclear exactly how this would work, but would somehow outline to principals how much funding they should be getting from their superintendents. And just sort of empower them to say, you know, I have this many disabled students, I should get this much funding for them. So I don't know if there's a sense that there would be an increase in state regulation from the Kasich administration. Ohio's really big on local control. Our school districts really enjoy having that element of local control. And there have been ideas in the past floated around about maybe pooling funds for schools. And it's never popular because Ohio is so big on local control and sort of deciding locally what they want to do.
Michael Griffith, that's an interesting point that Ida brings up. Are there any states out there that have looked at consolidating districts in a really serious way?
There have been. What you find, though, when you start looking at the research is you don't save an awful lot of money by consolidating districts. The studies show that really you only start to get cost savings when the districts are under 1,500 kids. And even then, you only get major cost savings when you're closing schools down. If you simply combine two school districts, all you're saving on cost are the administrator cost, and those are pretty small. As far as overall spending, Maine looked at a system of essentially attempting to force every school district to come up with a consolidation plan and find partner districts. It only went so far before it got shut down. It's sort of important to remember, too, that right now we have 12,500 school districts in this country. About 100 years ago, we had 125,000 school districts. So we've gone through consolidation. You know, and in a pretty major way over the past 100 years. And so there isn't much more you can do at this point.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the governor's proposal for funding education in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Another part of the plan would be to fully fund all-day kindergarten programs. The cost is, I think, $400 million over 2 years, but the governor's director of 21st Century Education said that they are willing to try to wean the schools off that dependency. Once again, we get to the issue of we're going to do this, but we only know going 2 years out that it's going to be done. How, Michael Griffith, is that pretty much the way all the states are? They're just kind of hand-to-mouth every 2 years or however their budget cycle works?
Yes. So you have sort of, there are two things going on in Ohio at the same time, and it's pretty common in most of the states right now, is you have the budget argument, which is year-to-year in most states, and in about 19 states, it's every 2 years, biennial budget. And then you have the formula itself. Formulas tend to be more solid and consistent over time. So the amount of money going into the formula may go up and down, but the formula itself is more consistent. In Ohio, there's been a movement over the last 20 years to almost change the formula every 2 years. So there isn't consistency always with the way it's being distributed. And so I think that's one of the problems you get in Ohio. The dollar amounts are always going to vary. There's not much you can do about that. But the way the money is distributed and what school districts can expect has been varying over the last 20 years in your state.
Ida, any sense about what the governor's director of 21st Century Education means by saying that they're willing to try to wean schools off the dependency on the all-day kindergarten funding? I mean, it sounds like they want to get them hooked on it, not wean them off of it.
Well, Ohio's kindergarten funding formula has sort of changed over the years. At one point, kindergartners were funded at what they would refer to as half. So, you know, one kindergartner got half a day's funding, essentially. And then they were funded, quote unquote, fully. So each kindergartner got one day of funding, but some of them only went to kindergartner for half a day. So now they're going to this new system, which actually this was the only thing that got a really enthusiastic clap at the Buckeye Association of School Administrators presentation, was that the state would fund all-day kindergarten at a one-to-one ratio and half-day kindergarten at a half ratio. So it would essentially be funded for the amount of time that kids are actually going to be in those programs. Which I think schools are excited about because it seems, you know, sort of like the fairest level of funding, I guess.
But it's not going to go on forever, apparently.
Right. Yeah. And I will just say one of the tricky things about Ohio schools coming up with a budget is that they have to come up with a 5-year budget. But as we've pointed out, the budget comes out every 2 years, and even that funding formula has been changing every 2 years. So it's really hard for schools to make these projections 5 years out when they don't know how much money they're going to get in 2 years and how that money is going to be allotted in 2 years. So that's a real challenge for all Ohio schools.
Rod in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. I wanted to make three quick points, and, you know, you can kind of choose, you know, which ones you want to address, you know, but basically, and on this first one, the horse is kind of, I think maybe the horse is out of the barn already, but I'm a public school product myself, and I've always favored the public schools, and it seems that you know, rather than improve the public schools, you know, we've elected to kind of go away from that and, you know, go to a charter school system. Also, you know, let's see, point number two is that, I want, you know, I wanted to basically mention that I think, you know, I'm concerned that our public schools are going to end up getting the worst of the worst, you know, the most challenged students or whatever, and having to deal with those. And also, point three, I'm wondering, you know, if there's going to be additional money there for, you know, students with special needs, you know, the more challenged students who need extra help.
Ida?
So the first thing I can say is there will be extra funding for students with special needs. Special needs kids already get some extra funding beyond what non-special needs students get. The funding formula also includes extra money for gifted students. It includes a $50 allotment to figure out who is gifted to give them the adequate services. And for the first time, the state is going to give funding for every English language learner in the state. So there are some extra funds in that sense. The points brought up about funds being taken away from public schools is not new. It's something that we've heard from public school advocates and union advocates that ever since the school choice movement has been going on for the last 16, 20 years. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's how you look at it. It's a question of how you look at it.
Michael Griffith?
No, I pretty much agree with what was just said, that, you know, this is an ongoing debate in every state that you have sort of three groups. You have traditional public schools, you have charter schools, and now you have the idea of vouchers going to private schools. And there is a constant tug of war in states about who's getting the money, how is it being distributed, and what's fair. Because that's also one of the issues that was brought up by the callers. Will traditional public schools end up being places that take the most needy kids, the mm-hmm. highest at-risk kids and the specialized students? We really haven't seen that, but that's a concern that's out there in states, and people have talked about it and worry about that. But
are schools that deal with the charter/voucher issues, do they tend to be the more highly populated states with lots of big cities, or do sparsely populated states deal with these same kind of issues?
Sparsely populated states don't deal with these issues, and you can see that a lot of them until the last 2 or 3 years didn't even have charter laws in place. The reason being, there aren't sufficient number of kids for a charter to be worthwhile to open. You know, when you look at a state like Vermont, that's a smaller rural state, there are 80,000 kids in the state in 240 districts. Each district is extremely small and too small to have both a traditional school and a charter. But when you go to larger urban areas, you see multiple charter schools existing within a school district, and the school district continues to operate and function much in the same way that it has in the past. So, yes, it's very much an urban thing, and it has slowly in the last several years become more of a suburban issue, where in the past the suburban schools tended not to have the charters. They're starting to have those more now.
Thank you, Rod, for that call. Gloria in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Gloria.
Oh, yes. My point with the joining together with one common fund from property taxes to equally distribute with all the school districts in Ohio mm-hmm. is well and good, and that makes sense. with the exception that then property taxes must be equal. I live in Hilliard. We pay $5,500 in property taxes. So if my $5,500 goes into a pot that equally distributes from schools, then I'm funding somebody, I'm supplementing somebody else's child that only pays $1,200. So I understand, and it makes sense to have one equal pot where schools are equally funded, but property taxes have to reflect that.
Michael Griffith, in states where they rely on a statewide property tax, do they equalize them in that way that Gloria is suggesting?
They do equalize. Mm-hmm. And what happens when those systems go into place is for some people, your property taxes will go down. For others, it will go up. And again, that's why these things tend not to be popular. And we have a tradition in the United States where while we share most other taxes, property taxes are seen as local revenue to be used for local functions. And so there's a real pushback by people. They're willing to share the income tax revenue. They're willing to share sales tax revenue in other taxes. But property taxes are a very particular type of tax where people want to keep it locally. So, you know, you have those two problems, the tradition of keeping it locally, and then the issue that once it becomes a statewide tax, for about half the people, their taxes could go up.
Michael, we're running out of time, but I wondered about the teacher allocation formula. How does that work? There's only a few states that do that.
So the teacher allocation formula is the idea that you're guaranteeing a certain number of teachers for the number of students you have. So for every 30 students, for instance, mm-hmm. you would get a guaranteed teaching position. It's tended to be used in southern states where they felt they had to put these mandates on school districts and mm-hmm. say to them, you know, you will have this many teachers within your school. You okay. will have this many principals. So it's a pretty rare system, and it really is a system where the state is dictating to the districts what to do.
Michael Griffith, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Michael Griffith, he's a senior policy analyst for the Education Commission of the States. And Ida Liaskovsky, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
Ida Liaskovsky is a reporter for State Impact Ohio. I'm sure this conversation on school funding in the state of Ohio will continue long after this. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.